presentation is for mature.
2 for 2.
Oh shit!
Oh, you were 2 for 2.
I was
just about to say anything.
And see, now you totally.
We're just gonna keep rolling.
Does this get edited out, or you just
do
it?
All right.
There is no editing at Guardians of the Geekery.
Who needs an intro?
Ow!
This project is extremely dangerous.
Thank you.
It's because I blew it out of the goddamn airlock.
Oh.
You're listening to the Guardians of the Geekery podcast, featuring Matt Starnslord.
Hello!
Carol the Cat.
I can push buttons.
The Kitty Geeker.
No, she can't.
Tiffany the Technician.
Hi.
Pure energy.
Most excited member ever.
And now, damn right they shot first. The hosts of Guardians of the
Geekery.
Doggy, episode 161. Holy moly.
It's like we've been doing this for a long time.
We have.
Just a couple. So we have some guests.
Where?
Right
now. Oh, hey. How'd you guys get in here? How'd you get the garage? Field? It's come out of your sponge allowance, my friend. All right.
It does make that noise every time you open the door.
Yeah. It does.
So we have Allie Nelson and Connor Bennett. They're here from Queen City Anime Convention, a first-year anime con. If you want to hear more about it, go back and listen to episode 160.
However, it will be on...
August 13th.
At the Hilton University.
Hilton. From 10 to 7.
Yeah.
Yay.
$6.
$6? Oh my gosh.
What a bargain.
You can't even get a cup of coffee for $6 anymore. I don't know what that was. Okay. Well, thanks for joining us again. Okay.
I'm so concerned.
We're going to talk about geeky shit. Let's do it. All right.
Let's do it. So, what are we talking about
first? So, first of all.
Yes.
Can what? We just celebrate that we don't have to mourn anybody's death this week?
Yay!
Nobody died.
It's not 2016 anymore.
Wow.
So yeah, far, I don't remember anybody. Yeah, I'm not being on Formica or whatever this is.
Yeah, I don't.
Formica?
Wood?
This is wood.
I know it's wood.
It's real wood.
The sonic screwdriver doesn't work on it at all. We're trapped.
But speaking of things that may be on the way out, Hawaii 5-0. Not doing so well. So, Hawaii 5-0, you wouldn't necessarily think that was geeky news.
I didn't even know it was still in the air, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I was going to ask that, but I was like, I don't know if that's going to downplay my geek cred.
It's actually going to be starting its 8th season. However...
Do they do, like, 4 seasons a year, or...?
No, it started in 2010.
Did it really?
It really did.
Wow.
So, for the geeky amongst us, we may remember that Grace Park, who was... number 8 in Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
Is actually one of the stars there, and she, along with Daniel Day Kim,
who was in Lost.
So there is a connection here. I'm not just pulling Hawaii 5-0 out of my mind.
And John Locke was on that for a while too, wasn't he? On there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you really like anything, you can be a geek about that.
Yes, right. Yes. There's 6 degrees of
them.
But Grace Park and Daniel Day Kim are both on there, and they both turned in their resignation at the same time because they found that they were getting like 15% less than their white co-stars.
Ooh. On Hawaii 5-0.
And, you know, it would be one thing if they were a first year, but they've been with the production for 7 years. And CBS was like, bye-bye.
And Daniel Day Kim's probably lived there since Law, so it's probably been like 20 years or something.
On Hawaii, so.
15 years?
Yeah, so just, you know.
That's a good gig, yeah.
Aww. So, you know, it's unfortunate, but I think it brings a good cause to light. And I've been reading some of the statements on some of the blogs that they've been interviewing on and stuff like that. And they're respectful and yet make a great point. And so we support them. And whatever venue they land in next, we would love to follow them. So make sure that you're tracking their careers and giving them the love and support that they deserve. And maybe someday we'll have equal pay for equal work.
And I'm kind of pissed at their co-stars because, like, remember with Friends,
they always
negotiated as a group, so they'd always get the same amount of money, and it's like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
I mean, you should be like stand
they
up
truly
to your.
Were
they should go on strike and say, "We're not going to act if you don't match our co-stars.
Well, and Daniel Day Kim said one of the things that was, I always want to say Daniel Day Lewis, but you know,
no, he retired.
I know.
Either that, or he's preparing for a new role as a retired actor. We're, yeah, we're not quite
it's
sure.
Like Joaquin Phoenix when he walked around for a year and a beard. But anyway,
I know. Same here.
Yeah. To focus back on the Asian yes. actors, Daniel yes. Day Kim said, you know, it was really kind of controversial for him because he said it's so rare that you find such a multifaceted character instead of a stereotypical representation. But the fact that he had a fully fleshed out character but didn't have a fully fleshed out salary just had to be spoken out against. And you know, it wasn't like they tried to jump ship after the first year. They were there for the whole 7 years.
Right.
You know, I think if you read the Nichelle Nichols from Captain Lieutenant O'Hara from Star Trek, she talks about the same conversation that at one point she had thought about leaving Star Trek, and she knew that she was being a symbol for Black Americans everywhere, especially, you know, female, black girls. So I think that was quite a challenge for them. So we support them and we salute them for making the effort. And shame on CBS for not working out a negotiation. They weren't asking for more. They were asking for the same. And I think that's reasonable.
Yeah. Well,
did CBS have any kind of statement on it?
Yeah, we wish them well. Mahalo, mahai.
Yikes.
Goodbye. Lemonade. Yeah, I mean, it just was, it was this snide as it could be.
And some people were like, well, they get paid more than me for a whole year. And I'm like, whatever. Yeah, but the other actors are getting paid that. And it's like, and also, they're like 16 to 18 hour days when you do these series TV shows. They're horrible. I mean, yes, you're in Hawaii, but I mean, still 18
horrible
hours outside.
18 hour days in Hawaii.
I can't be fanned all day. No, I mean,
I've heard like in Hawaii, like everything's just dome expensive. Like if you go to Burger King, like a number one is like $9 because
everything's
so
to be
imported. Yeah.
Unless you're eating, you know, poi.
Yeah.
So they need that extra 15% if they live in Hawaii.
Yeah. Well, and tourism is the number one employment over there.
Yeah.
So if tourists aren't there, nobody's making money.
Right.
So, you know.
And that attracts people to Hawaii, I'm sure.
So,
you see the show. Yeah. Okay.
So, hats off to that. Other negotiations that were underway this week, Warner Brothers and the Tolkien estate.
Actually, it wasn't this week. They've been
forever.
Yeah, this has been a lawsuit. Well, this particular lawsuit has been since 2012. There was a previous lawsuit for the Lord of the Rings series that I believe started in 2002. But Warner Brothers and the Tolkien estate finally resolved their rights dispute for The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings this week. The estate was saying that that Warner Brothers had overstepped its bounds as far as licensing characters from the series and merchandising from the series.
Overstepped their bounds.
Yeah. Oh. The contract, the rights to The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings were given to Warner Brothers through the Saul Zantz Company. And those rights were sold to Saul Zantz like way back in the 70s. So the wording on the contracts was very vague as far as merchandising. And of course, when these movies exploded, they wanted to merchandise everything. All of the things.
Is it not like public domain at this point? Like, I always thought it was like if the work was at least 100 years old.
It's 70 years. It's
70? Okay.
Yeah, and actually, The Hobbit is now 70 years, but the Tolkien estate has actually refiled it over and over.
That's how Disney keeps holding on to everything.
That makes sense.
Yeah. It's not actually supposed to be that way. But
Yeah, after 70 years, it's supposed to go public domain, but the Lord of the Rings hasn't reached that point yet. But the Hobbit was published, I believe, in 1937, so that has. But the Tolkien estate is very protective of it, in particular Christopher Tolkien, who now owns the rights to everything but The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. But they settled this week. Nobody got any money.
Oh.
According, now, the terms of the settlement are not disclosed, but the legal filing said that the two parties had resolved their differences amicably. It also stated that no fees or costs are to be awarded by the court and that no party is entitled to recover fees or costs. That doesn't mean that there's no money in the agreement. It just means court fees and stuff are not included in it. Warner Brothers is very happy that it was resolved amicably and says that they look forward to working with the Tolkien estate in the future, and the Tolkien estate said nothing. So
I bet it was a cut of merchandising or something.
It was.
It had to be something.
I know.
Really
I truly think if you have read any interview with Christopher Tolkien, who is J.R.R. Tolkien's son, he doesn't like the idea of merchandising his father's work
sure.
in such a blatant way. So I don't think it was money. I really don't. I think this was very much, he wants to protect the work. What this means for us fans is we'll probably never ever see the Silmarillion on screen because that's still held by the Tolkien estate, as is all of the histories of the Middle-earth and all of Tolkien's other works. So
they're probably not going to reboot the...
Well, they can reboot the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, but
yeah,
what the hell are you going to... What are you going to do with it? Seriously, what are you going to do with it?
You can't get Martin Freeman and Elijah Wood any younger.
So. No. And Jesus, you can't add any more to it.
I think they should do a Hobbit with Kevin Hart.
Please.
Don't God. See it.
Oh, can God. We unsay that? Just rewind.
It's out there in the universe
now. I would go
see
that sucker. I'm telling you.
I would watch that. For the 48 hours it takes to get through the entire both series.
Yeah. If Peter Jackson does it.
No.
But no, us fans, we're actually kind of looking forward to the Silmarillion reaching the screen. Because I like the Silmarillion. I know a lot of people are very... It's
Either
too
way,
hard to read.
But if it was on movie, they might actually see it.
Yeah. But, that'll probably never happen.
No.
Which
well,
is sad.
Going from the British Isles again, we had the season finale of Doctor Who. And it was quite a season ender. It was a two-parter, so it was the second part. It was an hour and a half. Have you been able to watch it yet?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what did you think about it?
I have to say, I got teary-eyed. I did.
I did too.
I really liked what they did with the Doctor and Bill. I did not like what they did with the Master and Missy.
I have hope for the Master and Missy that there's a reason why they did it that
way.
Oh,
no, I know that there's a reason why they did it that way, and I don't like the reason that they did it that way. Are we spoiling it?
I acknowledge that the council has reached a decision.
Have you guys seen it?
I gave up on Doctor Who like 5 years ago.
Get out of my house. Get out of my house.
I just hated Moffat so much that I was like, maybe someday when he doesn't write
this
show.
Last season was really good. So
is he still a showrunner?
He's done.
I'll start watching it again.
Yeah, so I think the way that they handled Bill and the Doctor and the way that they handled the cinematography of Bill and the Doctor was amazing, and I definitely cried. And the whole, like, her realization of what had happened. I thought it was a clever way to end for her, but I thought it was a little bit too clever because it reminded me a little bit of, like, oh, we aren't going to kill Clara. So
I didn't mind the way they ended Bill, and I do like, it's a shout out, anyone who doesn't know Doctor Who history, William Hartnell played the first Doctor, his wife's name was Heather, and so Bill runs off with Heather, and I thought that was actually kind of cute. But
yeah. One thing that I couldn't help but notice was when the Doctor was lying down inside the TARDIS and he had his coat spread out, and all of a sudden he had the puffy wristlets, or he had the bandages around his hands, so sometimes you couldn't tell whether or not it was the lace cuffed or not, which is very reminiscent of the first Doctor.
They actually had a side by side, and it was the exact same shot.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
So
it's
very intentional.
Cinematography.
All of a sudden,
that
sometimes his hair was very
poofy.
Yeah. Poofy. And it was all very reminiscent. And the fact that, like, so early on in the episode when he pulls out the jelly bellies.
Jelly babies.
I know, but still.
Yeah.
I was just like, okay, so it just gave you that clue of, like, okay, be looking for all the Easter eggs. And it was definitely there. Because the thing that killed me the most about Capaldi was the fact that you had somebody in, an actor in the role, who was so in love with the franchise.
Yeah.
And he got shafted a little bit the first season or so, and then the fans didn't invest in him because he had a hard battle to come after Tennant and Smith. So I kind of felt like this season he was given his due, and he got to explore all the things. But he got to explore all the things that I felt like he loved about Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And so for that, I doffed my cap. I thought that was well done.
Yeah. I love the ending,
Well, Yeah.
I love the First Doctor, and I just, that to me was just fantastic.
It was nice to see Filch get some work.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that was all great. The Master and Missy.
My thing is, the Master, well, what they did was they rewrote what they had said previously, because the Master was out of regenerations, and at that point he was just taking over bodies. But they have now stated that that was an actual regeneration. Which means that, and as they said...
But she said she didn't remember regenerating.
That's true, but then the Doctor told Bill that Time Lords don't adhere to gender specifics like other people do. They can go from male to female. I know this is setting up for a female Doctor, which I don't. I would go back
to the series if they did that. Like, that's always one thing that bothered me, is like the whole idea of the Doctor is like the Doctor can become a completely different person every time that the Doctor regenerates, and it just kind of so happened to be a white British man every single time.
That's true.
And now, I'm like, well, they could have done so much more with that.
Yeah, if they drag Idris Elba in there, I'm there. I'm there. I think it's pandering if they make him a female. And you have female Time Lords. You want a female Time Lord? Please bring back Romana. Bring back the president of the Time Lord Council.
Yeah. See, here's my thing, though. I guess a part of me, and maybe it's me not being as well-versed in the franchise as you are, because I've been watching
it for 35 years.
And I have, too, but I watched it while babysitting, not really knowing what I was watching.
Yeah.
I didn't have the internet to Google it when I was younger, so, and I didn't have family that watched it with me, so there wasn't, like, that precedent, you know. Tolkien and stuff like that, my brothers read it. So when I was reading it, I had somebody to talk about it with. When I went to school, nobody knew what Doctor Who was, because that was PBS. And why would you watch PBS? Well, I did, because I was babysitting. So for me, I kind of felt like Missy always left it a little open. You know, she never quite agreed. And even though the Doctor said what the Doctor said, the Doctor's still not always right.
That's true.
And she lies. I mean, that's like the first rule of the Doctor. The Doctor lies. So I just felt like this doesn't have to be the end. But maybe it was me just being in denial. Because, you know...
If that's the end of the Master, I do like the idea that the Master ended because he basically shot himself and then shot himself in the back.
Yes.
I do kind of like
that. Yeah, he said it's a full blast. You're not going to be able to regenerate.
Yeah.
But we know that the Master and Missy can jump. And they know that... She could run into somebody else and jump into that. You know, but she said there was an old woman that came running up to her. So how would the old woman come running up to her unless she survives?
Yeah. So, I don't think they're done with the Master.
I think they left a lot of habit trails that you could run down if you needed to.
They always do.
Which they always do. So I think that they'll probably go, okay, let's see what the fans get most mad about. If it was Moffat, which it's no longer going to be, it's going to be that. But I also love the way that it ended in the snowstorm and the whole thing. So the fact that the only thing that really bothered me in the regeneration scene is when he started quoting the Tenet lines. I was like, you can nod to all the old, but once you start doing the new Who, don't do that. So, but I did. I would love to see it be, you know, I would love to have seen Missy be who we were hoping she would be, the president of the Time Lords. So, but anyway, so, so now we have to wait till Christmas. Nice thing was that other than one or two people on my friends list when I logged into Facebook after watching it, we had most people saying, I can't wait till Christmas. And I was like, wait, why? Oh, yeah, Doctor Who. No, let me get through the Geek Gala first. So
I'm behind on everything.
Yes. But yeah, so that. And then Orphan Black is continuing on. Interesting developments there. And I'll talk more in depth about that next week. But that's going to be my British TV for a little while, that and Graham Norton, so let me go there. So I did want to talk about, I had the opportunity, unfortunately Matt's dad was in the hospital last week, so I got to spend a lot of last weekend by myself, sitting on the couch with my broken feet and being like, oh, I can spin watch stuff. And I got to catch up on a bunch of stuff. I finished Jean the Virgin in the third season and caught up on almost all the way on iZombie and stuff like that. And I'll talk about those another time. But one of the series that I feel like I don't hear enough about in the geek community and I don't understand is Stitchers. Stitchers actually involves characters from both Warehouse 13 and Eureka, which was...
they're actually the characters?
No, the actors.
The actors, sorry. Okay. I was like, wait a minute, because I would watch the hell out of that.
Yeah, no, there's actors from Warehouse 13. There's Allison Scagliata from Warehouse 13, who played Claudia. And then also we have the actress, and her name escapes me, who was... at different times the head scientist in Eureka, and different times she ran the company and didn't run the company depending on which world or parallel universe she was in at the time. And then also Peter, who is Benita Frederiki's husband? Peter
Rabbit?
No. And with that, it is gone.
Is it Peter Billingsley?
Yes.
Yeah, Peter Billingsley. He's
no,
in it now.
That's the
A Christmas Story.
Christmas Story guy. Yeah. Wait a minute here.
Somebody Billingsley.
It is somebody Billingsley, but it is not Peter Billingsley. That is the Christmas Story
guy. You're probably screaming at your radio right now going, why doesn't she know this? But it's just...
Yeah, I mean, you've met him.
What do people do before Google?
John Billingsley.
John Billingsley.
You'd have a conversation like this and you'd just be like, well, I guess I'll never know.
Yeah, John Billingsley, who was in True Blood as well as in Chuck. He was, I mean, he's been in 100 million things. So
while I'm at it, I'll just like stare at Peter Billingsley for a little while because he got really hot.
I know. But anyway, so Stitchers is about a girl whose father developed
to his chest hair. What the heck?
That was unintentional.
So anyway, it's a really good show and you should watch it. So
Stitchers.
The thing is, it's on Freeform and it feels like they've been playing it at midnight. So they're not putting it out there for people to watch. And I watch it on Hulu and stuff like that. So the first four episodes are out there. It's definitely worth watching and support it. I feel like it's a good geeky storyline. You get the myth arc, the monster of the week, as well as the whole myth arc going on. So it's... The woman is able to jump into dead people's brains and kind of roam about right up to the moment where they die to get clues to figure out who killed them. But she also, at this point, we know that part of the reason why she's trying to do that is because she's trying to rescue her mother, who was in a permanent coma state. So, so it's an interesting storyline, lots of good... cast and ensemble story arcs as well. So definitely check that out if you haven't checked it out already. All right, so let's talk comic books there, Mr. Stearns.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so Spider-Man is coming out, Homecoming is coming out. Marvel has launched their second Spider-Man title called Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man. Bum, bum, bum. And it's Chip Zdarsky and Adam Kubert, which is Joe Kubert, one of Joe Kubert's sons, which is a real famous artist. But this is really focused more on the ground level Peter Parker life. And it's fun, whereas The Amazing Spider-Man is more of this globe-trotting, big kind of Michael Bay action type of comic book now, which I don't really care for. But it's got the Human Torch in this issue. It has got Ant-Man, the Falcon as well. So a lot of fun. And the art is quirky, and it's kind of a thinner Spider-Man, where in The Amazing Spider-Man, he's all kind of bulky and superhero-y looking. This is a very thin Spider-Man, which kind of, that's how he started off, which I kind of like, so.
Yeah, he's a high school kid, isn't he?
Well, yeah. And he's always been geeky. I always thought he's never been the beat, I've never envisioned Spider-Man as big and beefy, because I don't envision.
Beefy Spider-Man.
I don't, spiders are kind of, spiny. And,
It's kind of like when you see, in an anime where, the really buff dude, he's like, I'm 14.
You don't need to say it. We all know it's JoJo. We all know.
Yeah, there's this artist, John Romita, who totally changed like the skinny Spider-Man to like when he was in college to where he was like really buff and I was like, but the thing was he still had like what they always tease the Parker luck where he's always out of work. He gets fired all the time because he's being Spider-Man and like he misses his exam. Like he never could graduate college because he was so busy fighting crime. And it was like everybody thought he was like this flake who was always late and like ruined his life. And it really, he was saving everybody. It was pretty cool. So, and so this comic book. So definitely check it out. Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man. So back in the original days, it started off just the Amazing Spider-Man, and then I think it was the mid-70s they came out with the first version of Peter Parker and the Spectacular Spider-Man, and that kind of went away over the years. So
how many Spider-Man titles are out there right now?
There's actually only two.
Really?
But there is Spider-Gwen, which is a cool kind of...
I love Spider-Gwen.
She cosplays.
Yeah, cosplay Spider-Gwen, so...
Yeah.
And it's so good! Thank you.
You look so good in that...
And two of the creators live here in Charlotte. Jason Latour is the writer, and Rico Renzi is the colorist, and they both live in town, which is pretty a cool Charlotte connection, I think.
Nice.
And then there is a Spider-Woman now. No, Silk. They call her Silk now.
Mm-hmm.
But do you ever cosplay that? I don't see those as often as
I haven't seen Spider-Girl, Silk a lot, but like I get really excited when I see her at a con because I don't see her that much.
I see them on my
unlike
Facebook.
Unlike Harley Quinn's. Can we stop the Harley Quinn's?
Never.
Yes, we can.
The Harley Quinn's don't bother me as much as the, like, infinite versions of Deadpool.
Oh, yeah.
It's cute until a certain point.
It's cute
until
you get to Dragon Con.
Yes! Like, literally.
5,000 different Deadpools.
And they hang out together in a, like, in mass of, like, 100, like, in a hallway.
Yeah.
I'm not ready for Dragon Con.
Neither am I. We're doing it.
So, Tiffany, you watched a movie called The Bad Batch, and was it good or was it bad?
It was fucking terrible.
Bad Batch.
Yes.
I had hopes for this because it's got my Keanu in it.
It does have Keanu in it. So basically the premise of this movie is that it's in a future dystopia, and people are tattooed with a Bad Batch number, and they're basically exiled from the United States and dropped into a zone, presumably between Mexico and the United States. That's like, you see a sign in the beginning of the movie where it basically says, "You are no longer on United States property. Good luck to you."
Yikes.
Like, you will never be recognized as a citizen. Da 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 da.
Why do they do this? What's going on?
It doesn't really tell you.
Okay.
It doesn't go into like what precipitates you being tagged as a Bad Batch person. But
it sounds like Gattaca meets the 100.
Yeah, that's. I was gonna say Gattaca. So that sounds actually reminiscent of Gattaca.
Oh,
like you could just
I
got
think
bad
I saw
genes.
That, but I can't remember enough anything about it.
There was a movie where was it like The Prison or something? It was Chad Lambert. What's his name?
Chad Michael Murray.
No, the guy who played Highlander.
Oh, Christopher Lambert.
Christopher Lambert. He and his wife, everybody had when you said Bad Batch, they had the UPC code.
Yeah.
And a Fortress? Was it Fortress?
It was Fortress. It was Fortress. Oh Jesus, I paid money for that.
So it's like this big prison and they all like fight and then it was just bizarrely bad, but going back to
Christopher Lambert.
But anyway, the Bad Batch. So they're in the dystopia.
Yeah. So it starts out with a girl, and this is in the synopsis. So I'm not giving anything away.
Okay.
But basically, this girl is walking. She gets dropped off because she's a Bad Batch, and she gets picked up by these couple of women and taken to this place where she. They cut off her arm and her leg.
Oh, yeah.
And...
One of each, or what?
On both... The same side. One of each. And you basically... And then you start to... It pans out, and you see that there are other people in the same situation.
Ooh.
And what it is a cannibal camp, and they're keeping them alive to keep the meat fresh.
Oh.
Or whatever. And it just shows you, like, how awful this territory is, and... The whole reason this was watched is because a friend of mine is absolutely obsessed in the same way I am with Henry Cavill, with Jason Momoa. And Jason Momoa maybe has 5 lines in this movie, and he's supposed to be Cuban, but at some point he sounds like he's Native American, and another time he's Cuban, another time he's just regular American.
Was this in a movie theater?
No. I don't know.
I've never heard of
it.
It
might have been in an independent film.
They had a special screening. I missed it because... We were somewhere We did something. It was the Saturday night that... no, I think it was actually Con Carolina.
So this made it to a movie theater.
I think it was... In Charlotte, it was only a special screening the Charlotte Film Society.
Limited.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was at C3 Laboratory.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't in a movie theater. It was a Charlotte Film Society special screening.
So you found this on Netflix or?
I think it's on Amazon and you can rent it for $6, which was a waste of money.
Oh,
but,
no.
But just to give it, so she can she escapes and she ends up in this town called Comfort. And so there's a whole society within this territory. And that's where you meet Keanu Reeves, who is called The Dream and basically a messiah character that likes to have like a discotheque and impregnate a lot of women. And then you meet what? Jim Carrey, who...
Carrey's in this?
Jim Carrey is in this as, like, basically a toothless, like...
So he's playing
the
Jim
worst
Carrey.
Homeless-looking man. This movie has... And there's, like, a little girl involved. And this movie has, like, no plot, no pacing. And it's really just the most awful thing to sit through. But, like, my friend kept thinking Jason Momoa's role was going to expand as the movie went on, so she made me continue to endure this, but I think it was also sort of hopeful that it would be good because it was written and directed by Anna Lily Amanpour, who wrote and directed A Girl Walks Alone at Night,
which is an excellent film.
Very well received, but I don't know if maybe more, I typically am a person that enjoys kind of more artsy films. But
have you seen A Girl Who Walks Alone at Night?
I have not.
You should probably watch that one. I think that one would probably be
redeem
more
your opinion.
Sure, but I'm sorry, I cannot recommend this movie. It was awful.
Yeah,
I kind of want to watch it now, though. There needs to be a drinking game involved.
Yeah.
Like
Riff Tracks need to get their hands on it.
Let me just say this: they have like no food there or anything, but what they do have is a giant electric boombox that the DJ can stand on to do the discotheque.
Oh, hell
I mean, that's
yeah.
important.
That's what kind of movie
it's
this
like
is.
Matrix 2. Where
that sounds like my apartment.
It's like, okay, you're scavenging for parts, but you got this huge rave underground.
Yeah. Kinda, yeah.
So tell us that Okja's better.
Okja's better, but this is a weird one. This is a weird one. This
Let
is
me
available.
Just say, as soon as I saw this on Netflix, I was like, there's no way that Carol is not going to watch this.
Exactly.
And there's no way that I am movie. Going to, because even though the animal isn't real, I will cry.
Yes, you will cry. this is the... I don't know who this film was made for, besides me.
She likes the weird stuff.
I do like the weird stuff. So, Okja stars Tilda Swinton, who I have a girl crush on, and Jake Gyllenhaal, who I kind of sometimes have a crush on, but definitely not in this film. And it's half Korean, half American production, so half of it is in Korean, and the other half you switch
you
back and
subtitles?
Forth to subtitles. Yes,
yeah.
You switch
As
back
it
and
does.
Forth to subtitles. But it's set in the not too distant future. They don't give you a year, but
not
this
too future.
Sorry. Not next Sunday, 80.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, this kind of. It is very heavily based on Monsanto, the GM company that creates genetically modified food.
Evil soybean corp.
Yes. And this company develops what they call super pigs, which are these huge animals that they want to breed as a cheap food source.
Right.
And they have a contest in 12 different countries to see who can have the best super pig. And Okja is the name of the super pig that this little Korean girl helps raise.
Aww.
And it's huge. It's a very, very large animal. But I don't know if anyone realizes this, but pigs are actually incredibly smart animals.
And then if you make a super big one, then...
Yeah, this is an incredibly smart animal.
Oh.
But they're raising them for food. So, yeah, if you like the animals, this is not a movie for you. They do some horrible things to Okja.
So is this going in like the same direction as like the velociraptors in Jurassic Park? Like
no,
pigs are smart. Too
pigs are
smart.
But no, they're not that smart. No. This is almost like a children's film made by the people for the ethical treatment of animals, but they drop F-bombs every 5 minutes. It's like fuck this, fuck that, fuck this, and I'm like, who is this made for? Because the I mean, Okja, it's a very cute CGI animal.
I almost watched it, but then I read the little paragraph, and I was like, I can't. I'll be crying because I love animals too much.
Thank you.
I can't do it. I just can't do it.
This will put you off bacon.
Yeah. I mean, I can see people fake killing people on TV all the time, you know, stuff, but it's like, I see any kind of animal, and I'm just,
me watching John Wick, it's like,
right.
All these people die, and I don't give a fuck, but you killed his puppy. It's like, John, I don't care. You killed those motherfuckers.
Every one of them.
You killed every one of those motherfuckers. It's hiding those motherfuckers. It's like, they killed your
puppy. I will help you. Yeah. We're going to send money.
Have you seen that one website? It's like, doesthedogdie.com. Yes. You can look up any movie, series, whatever, and it'll let you know before you watch it whether or not the dog died.
Marley and me, I was like,
I can't do that to myself.
This will make you cry, even though it's a CGI super pig.
It's the cutest kind.
Yeah, but it is actually a good film, and it's got some fast-paced action, and it's the soundtrack is really good. And out of nowhere, John Denver starts singing "You Fill Up My Senses," and I'm like, what the fuck is this going on? It's a good film, but. Did anyone watch Avatar The Last Airbender?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Appa's Lost Days. That was this movie form.
I don't want to cry over Appa.
I swear to God, that's what it was reminding me of. It's like I'm watching Appa's Lost Days all over again, and I can't do that because they hurt Appa, you fuckers. It's the one Avatar that I cannot rewatch.
Was it as good as the Harlem guy?
No, it wasn't as good as the Harlem guy. Man, okay. You know,
man from Harlem.
The guy from Harlem.
Right.
Okay, so it's time for group skate. So yesterday, for 4th of July, the Guardians of the Geekery got together for a little food that was awesome.
Yeah.
And then we got subjected to the guy from Harlem.
This is one of my favorite Riff Tracks episodes. For those of you who don't know, Riff Tracks is what Mystery Science Theater 3000, half of Mystery Science Theater 3000 became Riff Tracks, the other half became Cinematic Titanic for a while.
Yes. So, probably the only way that this movie is watchable is the fact that Riff Tracks talks over parts of the movie. But this movie literally starts in the middle of nowhere.
It's
just a girl sleeping on a couch and a guy sitting next to her, and then he gets up, walks over to her, pulls open her shirt, looks inside, and cops a feel. And that's how you find out that evidently she's kidnapped, because she's not tied up. She's not doing anything else. And he's like, hey, come on, man. Let me get down with you. You don't got nothing else to do.
Just so you're aware, this movie was made, I think it was 1976.
Yeah. It tried to be a blaxploitation movie.
And it failed.
There's lots of really bad decor.
And the fight scenes make, like, Star Trek William Shatner versus anybody look like a masterpiece. And
like, for real.
That was a masterpiece.
But
yeah, there's like literally a point where the guy kicks another guy in the ankles and he grabs his balls and falls over dead. Literally.
And then for some reason he drags everybody into the forest.
Yes, like, let's just drag
him. Because when he tries to tie the branches together, it doesn't work. Him. So he's like, fuck it. It's just bad. And, I mean, it's bad from the very beginning with the guy from Harlem theme song. It's the guy from Harlem.
It's just a dude with a bass and a mic and just going at it, man. One take wonders the whole time.
Yeah.
And you can't read the credits. Because
even the credits are painful, yes.
The credits are white.
They're white on white.
White.
The sky. They're
bleached out.
You only read part of them when they reach his afro.
Exactly. And then you feel so racist because you're glad he has such a big afro so you can read some of these names.
But it's a bad film, but I recommend watching it with Riff Tracks because it is funny.
It was very funny.
It went by really quick with
Riff Tracks. I don't understand what the... So the first guy walks in, the CIA agent walks in with his CIA buddy, and we never see the CIA buddy again.
No, no. The guy from Portland just kind of drops off the face of them.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what happened to the guy from Portland.
McCloud.
Yeah.
I wish they would do a Riff Tracks on the Bad Batch. Like, for real.
It's worthy of that.
It probably is.
They will.
Probably.
I mean, a lot of the movies, they find that they actually... I mean, they do a lot of commentaries for first-run films that you just buy the commentary and then you play your own disc.
That way they don't have to pay rights. They don't have to play stuff.
They don't have to pay royalty or anything like that. The whole video things, they have to pay royalties, or in this case, I don't think anybody charged them a dime to play.
Just like, please put something.
Please put something over. It's like your endemic. Film. Yeah.
Because sometimes it just all of a sudden it just goes to black.
Like, and then they're back.
And they're back, and the guy, and then one of the riff track guys go, and we're back. And it's like, it's like they were editing it for TV version at the same time. They're like, let's just save some time and do this. And we can insert, I don't get it.
And the lingerie, the thing that cracked me up was the fact that you would have these women in midriff shirts.
Yeah.
And low-cut bell bottoms. And then they would go into the bedroom
to slip into something more comfortable.
And they come out with a granny nightgown on from the neck down below with a billowing bathrobe over top. And then they start making out. And they never take... And the guy gets down to his very ill-fitting undies.
Oh,
was not doing himself any favors. They were gappy and saggy everywhere.
Oh no.
He didn't have enough to fill it out, which is not what the guy from Harlem usually does.
I think the lady stole the wardrobe from like the mod set that must have been next door, like B. Arthur's. She used to always wear that fucking
B.
long
outfit.
Like covering, I mean, you can't see an ankle. I mean, it was like, but literally they were in like ass grabbing shorts the scene before. It's like,
if
this makes no sense.
If you were watching the Golden Girls, this would be something that like Sophia Petrillo would be wearing.
That's what I'm saying.
Except for 2 feet longer. It wasn't anything Blanche Devereaux would wear, let me tell you.
And then there was that one line where the guy's actually like, and I'm like, what? You can't see her. It's like just a
heavy floating. In the 1970s, that was like a crop top.
It was just like tulle. It's like she was wearing a tulle.
Oh yeah,
all over.
I can't see anything. That's the way I like it.
Yeah. The best part is it was two separate women that showed up in the same nightgown.
Yeah. It's like evidently that was the director's fetish.
It was almost like two different movies too. Because I was like, wait, what happened to the lady he was guarding? That was like this international.
Yeah, the
like,
wife
plot?
Of an African nation's president.
Yeah, she just went away.
Yeah, and I'm like, wait, what? Was it her again? I'm like, no, that's
she
not her.
She had bad back problems. Died.
And then they had sex, and she didn't see them. Anyway.
You gotta check this out.
That was way too much time on that.
Yeah, so.
That's probably more commentary than it got when it was released. You guys realize that? Like, I can't see, like, Leonard Maltin sitting down, like, let's talk about the guy.
If our telling you about the plot makes you think you want to see it, we're sorry.
Rifftracks only.
Rifftracks.com.
I don't think you can find it otherwise. I don't...
You can find it on YouTube.
YouTube? Oh, that's too bad.
So let's go to something a little more current. Yeah. Carol, you and Tiffany both saw Baby Driver.
I liked this.
I liked it a lot, too.
This is an Edgar Wright film, so anyone who doesn't know who Edgar Wright is, he did Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz and The World's End. I really love those three films.
This wasn't the Alec Baldwin thing where he was a little baby.
No.
Boss baby.
That's all I can picture.
I got confused.
Sorry. Is it that scene where he's driving and the little kid's hanging on the back in the little toy car?
I'm going to say this probably isn't the best name for a film.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
But, I thought it was actually really good. It's about a driver who drives a getaway car.
Cool.
And his code name is Baby.
Baby.
Because he's only like 17, 18. And the kid's like, he's very young.
In the movie, yeah.
In the movie.
Well, maybe.
I don't know how old.
In real life, he's 24. I've looked him up because I'm about it.
Yeah. I was all about John Hamm, so
I
was like,
I knew you were going to say that, by the way.
So he drives a getaway car for a group of criminals that rob different places for Kevin Spacey. And he has tinnitus in his ears. And I don't know if you noticed it during the film, but there is a slight buzz through the entire film.
Ooh.
Where it's not as prevalent as people with bad tinnitus have, but I noticed it the minute the film started. I'm like, they're actually going to keep that buzz the entire film.
Ooh.
But he listens to music. To actually block it.
Huh.
Yeah. So he always has earbuds in his ear, and he's always has like 6-7 iPods with different music. The soundtrack is really, really great. The car stunts are amazing, and
most of them
are actual practical car stunts, from what I understand.
Oh,
there's very little CGI.
No, I haven't seen the movie, but I did listen to the interview on Nerdist with Edgar.
Oh.
And he actually talks about the fact that the fight scenes are choreographed to the music.
Yes.
And they actually play the music on set as these guys are acting it out, so that way they know to do the shooting in rhythm with the
song.
With
the song, yes.
And you can't see this because this is an audio podcast, but I was doing some pretty mad.
She was
mad,
like, yeah, mad
dancing skills with pointy finger guns. So,
yeah,
that was one of the things. Is like Baby drove based on the music he was listening to. So there's even one point where he kind of gets messed up, and he literally takes a second to rewind on his iPod. To the part in the song so he can drive.
He's like, wait a minute, I gotta start the song over.
So
he actually has to have a certain, you know, certain songs playing for certain driving moods. But of course, he wants to get out of the business, and Kevin Spacey, and that's never going to happen when you work for Kevin Spacey.
Kevin Spacey's trying to be a better guy than you think, though.
Yeah, that was probably one of the most
weird out of character
moments.
I think. And him being like, he's kind of an awkward dude that doesn't talk much, but for some reason he goes on a date with a girl and he's like all of a sudden smooth as fuck.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like giving the girl like these smiles and like, let's want to get out of here, girl, kind of a thing. And she's just like, yeah. And I'd be like, I'd be about it too. I'm not going to lie to this, but I'm just saying it's not in line with his character that he would be that good at picking women up. But anyway. Good movie.
Very good movie. It's a very fun movie. I recommend it. Awesome. I'd give it a B+.
Cool. I get A-. Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Oh, wow.
So, a new review on an old book there, Matt?
Oh, my gosh. I haven't read a book in a while. That sounds horrible. But because it really fucking is. So, what did I do? I read a coworker of mine said, you have to read this book. And I was like, okay. And it's Stephen King, but it was from 1984 is when it was first released. And it's The Eyes of the Dragon. And it has, it's basically this in medieval times, and it's very good versus evil, and these brothers, and this king, and the princes, and a wizard, so you got like sort of like a Merlin character, and it's just crazy. It's just like a pretty much straight up like fantasy thing.
Yeah, I think it is one of his few just straight up fantasies.
Yeah, and I guess later he actually tied it into the Dark Tower series, so it's in the in-world, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Is that
yeah
so it's part of that. And then I was reading, and I remember now, it's like, so the villain's name is Flag, and it's never really revealed, but it's R. Flag, which they use those initials for a lot of his antagonists and in novels and stuff. You'll see those initials keep popping up, so it's very
Randall Flag is the
bad
guy in The Stand.
Yeah, so it's very like these characters go on, and then of course I think, what was the thing with like those creepy vampire nuns? That's the novella that he wrote.
Oh,
like Our Town.
No, it was like the nun. What was it?
The Town. I mean,
that's the Ben Affleck where they dress as nuns to rob banks. Isn't it?
Oh no, it's Stephen King.
This is Stephen King.
It was a novella. I don't think they never made a movie out of it.
It was based on the
anyway, the king in this is Roland, and he was also, like, I guess a younger version, alternate version of him was in that novella, which is really weird. But I was reading it. I read it later, how it all connected. But that stuff fascinates me. But awesome book.
The Little Sisters of Eluria.
Yeah, yeah. And they're these vampire nuns. Mm-hmm. Just creepy as shit. And then a lot of that stuff ends up going into The Stand and some other things. It's really weird how it all kind of connects.
But I keep expecting him to do an overall, all of my books are connected in some way.
Well, they kind of are. They're all within two focus cities, so.
It's pretty intricate.
I really like when authors do that.
Yeah, but all those books he wrote, it's just amazing to me that he can. And it's not like, I mean, some of it's a little tenuous, but I mean, for the most part, it's cool.
In later years in particular, some of his books are really hit or miss. But I still read them.
Yeah.
Right.
After a while, you know, I think Mary Higgins Clark was that way for me for a while, and then it got to a certain saturation point where it was like, oh yeah, this is like that book from 10 years ago or whatever. So
Pick it up. It's like 300, just shy of 400 pages, but it's so fast of a read. It's paperback. I think you can still get the old hardback, but anyway, it's pretty crazy. And it has illustrations in there too, which is kind of neat. But
Well, we have pretty much used up our time, so I know we had talked about our five favorite movies, but let's save that for next week.
Okay.
And we'll actually put a list up on the old podcast asking you folks to tell us what your five favorite movies are. Maybe
that's
the five favorite movies that would define you a little bit. Like, if you were to pick five movies, I have a list of movies that, like, if somebody has been with me for a while, they probably need to have watched these movies or they won't understand half of what I say.
The guy from Harlem definitely is now part of my tapestry for the Matt bio. So yeah.
And I will try to work past that and stay married to you. So,
I appreciate
just
it.
Get yourself did they give me pop figures for the guy from Harlem?
I'll
buy that one.
Yeah, it'll be like,
if they could do Son of Zorn, they could do the guy from Harlem.
Let's not make that a petition. But anyway, okay. If you're looking for some cool events to do, make sure you check out charlottegeeks.com/calendar. We did two videos. We've been a little behind. We've had some family crisis going on, but we will be back to the video blog. So make sure you're adding your events there, including Queen City Anime Con, which is August 13th over at the University Hilton, going from 10 to 7 on Sunday. For the amazing ticket price of only $6.
That's
amazing. So make sure you check it out. Find them on Facebook as well as queencityanimecon.com. How do you like that?
Good.
That was very well articulated.
Thank you. And now that we've said all of that, you know, Allie and Connor, thank you so much for being part of this group.
Thank you for having us.
We didn't hear you off too much. And hey, Carol, do you think you can push the button?
Yep.
Oh.
Thank you for listening to Guardians of the Geekery.
Wow. Did you just see the look on her face? Like, I dare you. I dare you.
Pushing the buttons. And other buttons.
It would have been even funnier if she stood up.
I know. Sorry, Chris, we're talking all week again. Sorry. But we love you. Watch this podcast.
They're
funny.
They're
funny.
Boop, boop, boop.